It's Friday, July 31st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I have to begin the podcast today with some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that CBS Radio's chataboutit.com will not greenlight our Normal Show Live, two-hour live talk radio show. That's right, after all the negotiations, after all of the assurances, and after us raising money, they've decided they're a little gun-shy up there in the corporate suite and don't want to associate with Normal. But the good news is, Normal Show Live is not dead. We're still going to put it on the air. It's just going to appear through another outlet called blogtalkradio.com. It'll be available through the Normal website, through the Normal Daily Audio Stash website, our MySpace, and our Facebook pages, and actually turns out to be a better deal and better technology than what we were going to get with CBS anyway. So keep those donations coming, because they will help us to promote the show, to buy the advertising, to make it the number one live talk radio show on the internet regarding marijuana legalization. Also want to remind people we're taking applications for our street teams in the San Diego, San Francisco, and Los Angeles areas to pass out flyers to the dispensaries and the other associated businesses that would be interested in promoting the Normal National Conference this September 24th through 26th at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in San Francisco, California. I've received some information from a few of you, some San Franciscans and some San Diego people, and a couple in Los Angeles, but if you haven't gotten in on it yet, just send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject street teams, and we'll get some flyers out to you so you can distribute them for us. It's also time for some shout-outs.
It's a Normal shout-out.
I've got folks across the river from me in Vancouver, Washington, who are very, very interested in starting a Normal chapter for Clark County, Washington. If you're in the Vancouver, Battleground, Washington, Southwest Washington area, send me an email at stash@normal.org with your name and your city, and we'll get you in touch with these other folks in Clark County. Also, another kind of a Portland reference here, but on the other side of the country, Portland, Maine has emailed me. Now, we have a great chapter in Maine called Mainly Normal, but it's a fairly big state, so we could have more than one chapter. If you're in the Portland, Maine area and you'd like to get involved, send me an email with your name to stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, a look at Austin, Texas, where a 19-year-old murdered a 21-year-old over a fronted bag of weed. We look at new medical science showing 10 to 20 years of marijuana smoking may lead to less incidence of head and neck cancer than those who don't smoke. An op-ed from the California State University dean who says that California values its prisoners more than their students. And back to the state of Maine, where we take a look at the conviction of a medical marijuana grower that was upheld by the Maine Supreme Court, despite the fact that he was caring for his wife with ovarian cancer. It's one of those rare fifth Fridays of the month, so we're going to go back to New York City and speak with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com, who has another tragic tale to tell us from the Gathering of the Vibes Festival. In our It's a Wrap Friday Daily Toker Tunes from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we feature Cooley High and his tune, I Get High. And in our Cannabis Community segment, we speak with filmmaker Adam Scorgi, the writer-director-producer of the new documentary, The Union, The Business of Getting High, that takes a look at the underground marijuana business and how they don't want legalization. You'll want to hear this one. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. ''19-year-old man murders 21-year-old man and girlfriend over fronted marijuana.'' From the Houston Chronicle, Austin, Texas. A 19-year-old accused marijuana dealer told Austin police that he fatally shot a young couple from Houston in their condominium near the University of Texas last week to avoid paying the male victim thousands of dollars in drug money. Police charged James Richard Ricky Thompson from the Austin area with 2 counts of capital murder in the July 21st shooting deaths of Stacy Marie Barnett, age 22, and John Forrest Goosey, age 21, a young Houston couple that had just earned degrees from University of Texas. Goosey is the son of prominent Houston eye surgeon Dr. John D. Goosey. His mother is Claire Goosey, a breast cancer survivor known for her volunteer work in the community, said attorney and longtime family friend Gary Tidwell. Barnett, who lived with Goosey, appears to have become a victim solely by being home when Thompson arrived, police said. There is no evidence that Barnett was involved in marijuana dealings or that she used marijuana. During interviews with police, Thompson admitted that Goosey had, quote, fronted him, end quote, substantial amounts of marijuana to sell and that he did not have the money to repay him. Goosey was pressing him to pay up, according to police. Friends don't let friends front marijuana. This is the result of a prohibited market. Goosey couldn't take Thompson to court to get the thousands he was owed. Goosey and Thompson paid no business tax, applied for no license, and were subject to no regulations regarding the transactions involving thousands of dollars of goods. Thompson can't file for bankruptcy to escape an impossible debt. And while Goosey and Thompson knowingly involved themselves in a criminal market, Barnett is dead because she was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. When was the last time you heard of the convenience store clerk shooting the beer distributor because he was behind on his payments? Study, quote, 10 to 20 years of marijuana use was associated with a significantly reduced risk of head and neck cancers, end quote. We've told you for a while now about the anti-tumoral properties of marijuana. We've repeatedly shown you that marijuana smoking does not lead to an increased risk of head or neck cancers. But now research is showing that marijuana smoking may actually help prevent head and neck cancers. Cannabinoids, constituents of marijuana smoke, have been recognized to have potential anti-tumor properties. However, the epidemiologic evidence addressing the relationship between marijuana use and the induction of head and neck squamous cell carcinoma is inconsistent and conflicting. 434 cases were patients with incidence of head and neck cancer disease from 9 medical facilities in the greater Boston, Massachusetts area between December 1999 and December 2003. 547 controls were frequency matched to cases on age, gender, and town of residence, randomly selected from Massachusetts town books. A questionnaire was adopted to collect information on lifetime marijuana use, decade-specific exposures, and associations evaluated using unconditional logistic regression. After adjusting for potential confounders, including smoking and alcohol drinking, 10 to 20 years of marijuana use was associated with a significantly reduced risk of head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. Among marijuana users, moderate weekly use was associated with reduced risk. The magnitude of reduced risk was more pronounced for those who started use at an older age versus newer users. However, for the subjects who have the same level of smoking or alcohol drinking, we observed attenuated risk of head and neck squamous cell carcinoma among those who use marijuana compared to those who do not. Our study suggests that moderate marijuana use is associated with reduced risk of head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. So wow, a scientific study that shows that marijuana may actually reduce the risk of cancer. Waiting to hear this one broadcast all over the mainstream media in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. California values prisoners more than students. This is from a brilliant op-ed piece by the dean of the California State University System, San Francisco Gate. During the budget debate, it became clear to me that something unthinkable has happened in California. Our fiscal meltdown has so distorted our legislative priorities that we are now a state that places a higher priority on prison than on higher education. Last week, at the same time that the California State University's Board of Trustees was approving dramatic measures to manage unprecedented budget cuts, a tentative budget deal in the legislature was unraveling because of outrage over cuts to California's prison budget. How could the message to California students have been any clearer? You can cut higher education to the bone and you won't hear a single statement of remorse from the legislature, but start cutting into the prison budget and you'll hear howls of protest from the Capitol. It costs $49,000 per year to keep a prisoner behind bars in California. However, the state's contribution per student at the CSU is just $4,600. This dichotomy is not just outrageous, it is tragic. For such a relatively small amount of money, a young person could get a good education, secure a meaningful job, and become a contributing member to the community and the economy. But instead of preserving this small investment in our young people, our leaders would rather spend 10 times as much to keep prisoners behind bars. It's a sad figure to report, and up here in the state of Oregon, we're actually one of 5 states that does spend gross dollars more money on our prisons than we do on our students. It's such a sad thing when every study has shown that for every $1 you invest in education, you save $7 in social costs. And yet, we still value our prisoners more than our students. Maine medical marijuana grower's prison sentence upheld by Maine Supreme Court. From the Bangor Daily News. Voters passed a referendum in November 1999, and the legislature amended it in 2002 to allow the medical use of marijuana. The law allows a designated caregiver to possess 2.5 ounces of harvested marijuana for the benefit of a patient eligible to receive medical marijuana, plus a total of 6 plants, of which no more than 3 could be mature, flowering plants. Since the enactment of the law, people have asked Donald K. Kristen, age 55, to be their caregiver once they have received the necessary medical permission to use the drug medicinally from their physicians. Kristen argued he was following the law when Somerset County Sheriff's deputies, armed with a warrant in 2004, seized 13 marijuana plants from his residence. Kristen argued he had the proper paperwork to show that he was acting legally as a caregiver to at least 6 people, including his wife, Pamela Kristen, aged 45, of Madison, who was suffering from ovarian cancer. Let's see, 6 patients times 3 flowering plants equals 18 plants, doesn't it? And an ounce shy of a pound of medicine, right? A wife suffering from cancer, 13 measly plants, what else does a guy have to do to prove he's not abusing the medical marijuana law? Donald K. Kristen was sentenced in August 2007 to 14 months in prison, with all but six suspended, followed by 2 years of probation. A jury found him guilty 4 months earlier of aggravated marijuana cultivation and not guilty of drug trafficking at the end of a 3-day trial in which Kristen represented himself. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court on Tuesday unanimously upheld the 2007 conviction. Well, there's the first mistake. A person who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. Peter Bickerman, the Augusta lawyer who represented Kristen in the appeal, argued that Superior Court Justice Kirk Studstrup incorrectly instructed the jury about the state's medical marijuana law. Because Kristen did not ask for specific jury instructions or object to jury instructions at the time of the trial, the court was limited in its review to obvious mistakes, Justice Ellen Gorman wrote. She also said that although Studstrup never specifically told jurors that a designated caregiver could possess a usable amount of marijuana for each eligible patient, he did give them written copies of the law. This is why the battle over medical marijuana must include marijuana legalization for all. As long as cannabis is prohibited to the majority of its users, medical marijuana laws will always have to draw lines to separate the criminals from the patients. Many legitimate patients will be left on the criminal side, and the rest will suffer the scarcity, prices, and hassles prohibition brings to all cannabis users. And when it comes to marijuana, always get yourself a real lawyer. Lawyers are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug conviction.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service
announcement.
Everyone move.
When it gets to start night.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news.
We got one of those rare months where we get a fifth Friday of the month, and that means we're going to go back to New York City and speak with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com, the number one site for celebrity entertainment information and the cannabis community. So, Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Russ.
We were talking before we got on the air here about this Gathering of the Vibes festival and some very interesting citizen journalism that was going on at Celeb Stoner. This is kind of a first for you, and I thought I'd give you a chance to talk a little bit about it.
Well, the Gathering of the Vibes festival has been going on since after Jerry Garcia died. It takes place in the Northeast, and it's been moving around a little bit from upstate New York to Bridgeport, Connecticut over the years, and been recently taking place in Bridgeport, and they had the event this past weekend. It was headlined by Bob Weir and Rat Dog, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Levon Helm, George Clinton, Moe, you know, a lot of the classic and, you know, current jam bands. And they had a big problem there this weekend. Besides weather issues and stuff, there was a lot of rain and lightning and stuff that delayed a lot of the events. But on Sunday morning, campers woke up to find a dead body on the campground. And It's not to say the first person's ever died at a festival, but it was the first on-site ever gathering of the vibes, and obviously it brought down the vibes probably pretty heavily. It happened in the early morning, and the reports were that the body was dumped, and although the police originally just called it, they weren't alarmed by the nature of the death, assuming that there was some sort of natural cause or perhaps an overdose. People who saw the body apparently claimed that it was burned and purple and bruised, and once the word got out that there was a dead body on the site, and police were called, investigation ensued and, pretty much shut down that portion of the campground, and had people probably scurrying away and hiding all their goodies. I'm sure, they weren't going to be investigated too. So the story, happened. It happened on Sunday. We posted the story on Sunday night, Death at the Vibes, and all week long we've been receiving comments from readers of Celeb Stoner, filling us in on what happened there. Many, I'd say, out of the 50 plus comments, I'd say half of them were from people who were there. And what developed was a big kind of debate over what people call the Nitrous Mafia. Now, that may be an East Coast phenomenon in festivals where nitrous is very popular at the festivals. It's something that was always popular at dead shows, remains popular at fish shows, and certainly remains popular at jam band fests like Gathering the Vibes and these Camp Bisco, All Good Festival, kind of East Coast festivals. Maybe I think the nitrous scene is a little more popular on the East Coast than on the West. And everybody out there has done their share of balloons and think it's kind of okay, but the question is, who's bringing the nitrous in and what's the behavior of the people who do bring that in? They're making a lot of money. Are they part of the scene? Are they really, are they hurting or harming the scene? And a lot of people over the years have thought that nitrous is a bad part of the scene. Even though, they don't necessarily think that one or two balloons is a bad thing, the overwhelming number of people doing it and the amount of money people spend and all the litter from all the balloons and just the general old, zombie-like behavior of a lot of the people who use a lot of that and spend a lot of money and the people who actually bring it in who are being called the Nitrous Mafia. Now that was not a terminology I was really familiar with, but that's what the readership was saying. So they concluded that this young fellow who died, whose name was Jay Calero of East Meadow, New York, did not die of a natural cause, but was murdered. Now there's been suspicion that maybe he tried to hone in on the business, maybe he tried to steal something, maybe he got on the wrong side of one of these bad dudes, and they, had it out, and then they just dumped his body. Now there was a report of a Pennsylvania license plate, and then I heard from other people saying, well, that's where a lot of it's very easy to acquire, to buy your nitrous. You can go to a particular place in Philadelphia and, and get it filled up if you have your container or buy, rent the container. So, that's really what the storyline was. There's no more news about this. Nothing else has been reported other than the name of the person who died. There's been no conclusion of how he died. But according to all the readers at Celeb Stoner, it was something foul going on at Gathering the Vibes. And there was also suggestion that there was no stopping it, that there's this nitrous alley. If anybody's been to a dead show, if you kind of wander long enough, you'll find the nitrous scene with the familiar, hissing sound coming out of the nitrous tanks. And that's, if you want to go for that, that's where it'll be. It'll be kind of tucked away somewhere, usually after shows. Nitrous is sort of like a borderline of like acceptance. And I think with the death here, people are not accepting it. And I think he kind of has pushed this out into the open that there is a problem at these events and this problem has to be dealt with. And, if it's not, there are going to be more kids who are going to die.
Yeah, you would hope that something good would come out of this, and it wouldn't be a meaningless death. Let's move on to the movie scene. Of course, I've got an interview later on in the podcast with Adam Scorgi, who's the director of this great movie, The Union, The Business of Getting High, which a certain Steve Bloom is featured in. But there's another movie out there that you were telling me about, this movie Shrink with Kevin Spacey. He's a pot smoker in the movie. Tell us a little more about it.
Yeah, Shrink is out. It opened last Friday, and it's going to a bit of a wide release this week now. And Shrink is a movie about a psychologist or psychiatrist played by Kevin Spacey. Interestingly, Kevin Spacey, people probably remember, played the pot-smoking husband in American Beauty, who was going through a little bit of a life crisis, and marijuana helped him through that crisis, and his next door neighbor was selling pot. He famously bought marijuana for $2,000 for a very small amount in 2013. Yeah. And everybody always laughed, but it was still, you know, it was nice that marijuana was a, had a, had an essential part of American Beauty, which won an Academy Award. And so, now, these years later, Spacey comes back and is playing kind of a similar character who's going through a life crisis. His crisis that his wife committed, just had committed suicide prior to the, like say, start of the movie, and he's in the throes of despair. So during that despair, he doesn't really want to work. He's not really very interested in his patients, and he smokes a lot of pot and he drinks and he basically sleeps it off, gets up the next day, looks like crap and goes to work. So his friends think that he's got a problem, or believe he's got a problem, including his father, who's a psychologist as well, and they stage an intervention. This is for marijuana, essentially, or for marijuana and drinking. And during the intervention, Spacey has a great line. He says, "I'm not some drug addict on Wilshire Boulevard. I'm going to my car. I'm going to take a big hit from a self-medicating joint, and then I'm going to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken because it's finger-licking good." And it's a great line, probably the best line in the movie. But the movie sort of devolves. The different storylines and stuff, you know, don't really have much to do with the pot element. You know, it's just, you know, there's just different people that are his basically clients or patients that he sees, and there's storylines around all of them, and kind of the storylines are similar to the player because it's a Hollywood-oriented story. He's the psychiatrist to the stars, so to speak, and so there's, you know, movie stars and screenwriters and people like that he represents. So it has a little bit of the player flavor and agent, so it's like Entourage and maybe a little bit like Crash with the intersecting kind of storylines. Honestly, this movie is not as good as any of those three. And then as the story goes, you know, he gradually leaves marijuana behind. He has a dealer, and the dealer is kind of a cool guy, who brings marijuana in a tackle box and has all these crazy flavors, one of which is called Pussy Finger. And which is one of the brands that, that Spacey buys for $175. So the price has gone down considerably since American Beauty.
Yeah.
Now, Spacey in an interview on MTV says, "I think it basically comes down to the kind of pot you smoke." He's like comparing American Beauty and Shrink. In American Beauty, it was G5 or 4. And in this film, this was funny, you couldn't remember. And in this film, it's every kind of bad pot you should probably never smoke. Now, I don't understand that quote. You know, why would this guy, who's a dealer to the stars, or a dealer to a high-end shrink who deals with the stars, why would he not have the best marijuana that you have available in Los Angeles? He seems like he does, if you open up his thing. It's not bad marijuana, but in Spacey's mind, that's the reason why he's having sort of some sort of problem, because later on, towards the kind of the peak or the critical moment in the storyline, the dealer comes around, he's got something really high-end, you know, I don't know if you can handle it, and then he says, "Yeah, I want it. I want the best stuff you got, or the strongest stuff." So he buys something that's called Christmas in Vietnam, and they both guys, the dealer and Spacey, end up in the hospital because the pot was dipped in embalming fluid. Now, this guy sold him that crap, and they both go to jail, they both go to the hospital. It's insane. It makes no sense whatsoever. But it's the device that will make him stop smoking pot.
Ah.
It's absurd. You know, what are they smoking out there in Hollywood?
Well, we hope nothing with embalming fluid in it.
This one really, it's like so regressive. You know, at this particular point in time, it takes advantage of the idea of medicating the way people do out in California, but it kind of comes off on the complete wrong side of it. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to be completely in favor of it, to be so negative about it. You'd have some dealer would come around and sell you embalming fluid dipped marijuana that would send you to the hospital. It's absurd.
Yeah, no, so we don't need movies like that.
I really wish people stay away from Shrink.
Steve, you got any appearances that you need to get out here on the air?
I'm staying kind of local. I'm not going to the Seattle Hemp Fest this year, and I sorry that I will not see you this year as well there. And I guess I will see you in Boston.
Right.
So we're coming closer and closer to the Boston Freedom Rally. I will also be going up for the Woodstock 40th anniversary celebration at Bethel Woods, where they're doing the Heroes of Woodstock tour. So I'm going to go to that. It's not an appearance as much as just an attendance. And I'm looking forward also to next week's Blazed and Confused show with Snoop Dogg, Slightly Stupid, Stephen Marley, Mickey Avalon coming through New Jersey. So, you know, hitting shows. I went to see Burning Spear last night in Prospect Park in Brooklyn, so there's always good music. Slipstoner is always on the scene.
All right. Well, Slipstoner.com, the number one source for your celebrity entertainment, sports, music, anything that has to do with cannabis in the world of entertainment. Steve, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Larry. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z guide to stoner language and life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Today's Toker Tune for It's a Wrap on Friday is I Get High by Cooley High. Cooley High, from the West Coast, has been making a name for himself in the rap world for more than a decade. He was a hip-hop baby who came to music through breakdancing. Cooley High's musical style is fun-loving with a laid-back flow, typical of the West Coast. He has worked with many popular rap artists and features some of the best in the business on his latest album, with production being handled by producers of 50 Cent and Busta Rhymes. Cooley High recently started a record label and also hosts a 420 internet radio show. To keep updated about Cooley High, check out myspace.com/CooleyHigh420. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's I Get High by Cooley High.
It's I Get High. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. It's I Get High. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. It's I Get High. Always keep it low. And always stay fly. It's no lie, cause it's my life. Bitch, I get high.
Ah, yes, Haley's Comet. I'll come doing some shit that'll make you vomit. Bitches looking out their houses like, yeah, he done it. Them VIP ropes open like, yeah, he coming. And they wait. Every bitch anticipating for me to point out the lucky one participating. Girl, you shaking with Black Chill, the king of the making. The pork eating summer bitch, you know, to bring home the bacon. Or the whole pig rolling shit, the hoes gay. Pull up like, oh, oh, this taking no shit like shit. I know your ladies like this. All this nice shit, plus I'm dark as night is. That's a plus. I cook a bird up to the crust. If it's a must, do anything to keep my fucking bucks. That's the business. Also hard and cap the witness. You little rap ass niggas can't match my sentence. Cause I'll pop one of y'all and go max the sentence. You little niggas better ask and listen before your ass is missing. 600 with the ashes in it. Low pro with the gun stash in it. I keep some fat ass in it. Them bitches grilling cause they knew I'm with it. You niggas wool when I roll past in it. Getting high.
You smoke a joint and you get the urge to eat pussy. Is that considered munchies?
Bitch, yeah, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Bitch, yeah, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Bitch, I get high. Always keep it low. And always stay fly. And it's no lie, cause it's my life. Bitch, I get high.
Smoke what most niggas re-up with. Spit shit that niggas they can't fuck with. Put it in the dizzy, I said it in a mix. When I pause, it's kinda like when niggas writing and then dig. Cush the train wreck, the kind of shit you put off in the ashtray next. Have joints, have a nigga having points like, yeah. Ain't said shit, but yeah. Fell in with Cooley High Keys, chillin' slick. Morgan and Coke, I sip. Thick bitches all over, showing love, looking for niggas to get with. But niggas in the spot on some champagne shit. Fucking with regular job chips. Five drinks deep, 20 niggas in the click. Over the hating on the way my split. Look long, nigga, watch me get high as
bitch. Yeah, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Bitch, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Bitch, I get high. Always keep it low. And always stay fly. And it's no lie, cause it's my life.
I get high in the sky, bitch, I'm fly as a plane. Keep a fit for the Jack and the Mary the Jane. I'm hardly starving, pull up in a Aston Martin. Smoking some Bob Marley, I beg your pardon. Steel ghetto, roll down slossing. With two bad bitches flossing. Same two I'm tossing like salad. Just the credentials, your boy Valley. Mr. California with the Malibu Palace. I'm smoking dro while my hoe catch callus. $1 million ball piece, the kid got talent from way back. Deuce in a quarter with the A-track. Now we putting candy paints on the Maybach. Hitting these labels up in till we make they safe crack. We reinstated then, black chill state that. Get high, get by, that's all we do. Stay ballin' on y'all when we come through.
Bitch, yeah, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Bitch, yeah, I get high. High like the motherfucking bird. Keep it low like the motherfucking curve. Always fly as a motherfucking fur. It's my word. Keep it low and always stay fly. And it's no lie, cause it's my life. Bitch, I get high.
Now this weed right here, we like to call it brick weed, also known as brown crown or swag. Nobody really wants to see this in their bag when they get it, but every once in a while when you're broke and you're poor, you have to deal with the brick weed. And unfortunately, the next week you're gonna be in the same position with that brick weed. And it's, you know, it's nobody's fault.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normalnorml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty, but we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experiences of our cannabis community.
We're taking a look today at a new film, a documentary film called The Union, The Business Behind Getting High. And the producer, host, filmmaker, jack of all trades on this movie, joining us here today to speak about it is Adam Scorgi. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so I want to let people know the website address, which is theunionmovie.com. This is a documentary. It's gotten a lot of awards, Best Canadian Documentary, and all sorts of other awards. And give our listeners a thumbnail sketch of what you're trying to examine in this documentary.
Well, in the Union, the main thing we really examine is we really take an economic look at the marijuana situation in North America. We look at how the original laws have influenced the laws to date, and we look at what businesses are profiting from the way the laws are now. And a lot of the people profiting in the film is what is probably what's most surprising, is that that's kind of why there's no movement in the current marijuana laws, is because there's a lot of lobbying groups that are profiting from the way the laws are structured right now. Now, one of the biggest lobbying groups that want to keep things illegal is the growers and drug dealers themselves, because they're one of the highest profiters of the business.
Okay. So yeah, a lot of people would look at that economic reasoning and point to, oh, say, the pharmaceutical industry or the prison industrial complex or textile manufacturers and so on. But you're making the point here that it may actually be the people involved themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we point all those other lobbying groups as well, but one of the biggest things, which is, even if you really didn't get into the argument, probably one of the most surprising things is we do interviews with growers and stuff in the BC culture, right, that are smuggling it to the United States, and they're one of the pushers for, they'd even like to see the sentences get stiffer, because then the prices go up.
I see.
Right? When a product is in demand and the penalties get stiffer, it knocks out a lot of competition, right? Therefore, prices go up, mm-hmm. and they would make more money.
I see. Now, you've got a ton of interviews. I'm looking at the interview list on the website right now. A ton of interviews with people that a lot of them have been guests on this show. Norm Stamper, Tommy Chong, Jack Cole, we just spoke to a couple weeks ago. Of all the people that you spoke to, did you find a perspective that caught you by surprise in doing the investigation for this movie?
Besides like Norm Stamper was amazing, talking about kind of the you know, the ongoing fight with law enforcement and how it's, a war they never win, just one they participate in every year, and how majority of their budgets are funded on the drug war, so they have an invested interest in making sure that it continues. But, I mean, probably the biggest shock for us was the dealers themselves saying that no way do we want to see things legalized. You know, we'd like to see the penalties get stiffer, and we're like, wow, but you guys are taking all the risk. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, they're like, we can make $150,000 or $300,000 in 1 year tax-free, and recessions don't affect us. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was to us. We're like, wow, well, that really doesn't make sense that you guys are the ones that can have the risk of all the jail time, yet you guys are one of the biggest pushers to keep things the way they are.
Yeah. Now, there are a lot of movies out there that take a look at the marijuana industry. There's also been a lot of documentaries this year on some of the cable channels, Nat Geo, MSNBC, and so on. What are people going to find from your movie that would differentiate it from some of these other documentaries out there about marijuana?
What really separates us from the rest is that we really debunk a lot of the myths, but one of the big things is that we go deep into the BC industry and really explain the breakdown of the smuggling. You know, how much they make, how they bring it across the border, how it's then traded for other illegal products which are brought back into Canada. You know, how it's become a billion-dollar international business, right? And that's something that really, because I grew up around that culture here in British Columbia, and it's so in your face, and there's so many young people that have just absurd amounts of money from the marijuana industry, that was really able to open eyes. And I think that's why our film has gotten so many accolades and really changed people's perspective, because we're really showing from the dealer side of things, right? And how much they're making, and people are just like, wow, like, they're, you know, making absurd amounts of money, and they want to continue the prohibition because of how much they're making. And we break it down to even like how, you know, legal firms are, you know, they incorporate LTD companies and keep growers out of jail, and the electric companies that have inflated electric bills so they see a profit. We really break down all the businesses that are surrounding the industry too, that profit indirectly from the business, that are a big reason why it's going to continue to flourish. Because, you know, a lot of people can always point the finger at just the people breaking the law, but the people who accept the money from the people who are breaking the law, I really look at as no different.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And you also, you know, something that I always think about too is some statements that I've heard that circulated around the UN and some international figures when they were talking about these bank collapses that we suffered toward the end of 2008 and the beginning of this year, and how illicit drug money, not just marijuana, but from other crops as well, could be part of the cash flow that's just keeping these banks alive. Does anyone in your movie, or does your movie go to the point of trying to examine how this would change, or has it become so entrenched, such a set economy now, that there might not be a possible way to legalize this and bring it above ground?
We don't really, that's another thing that is good in our film, is that we don't make a decision for the audience. Mm-hmm. We don't say this is what should happen, or this is, all we do is present the facts, and, you know, we list them all on websites at the end and just say, like, this is what's going on, this is how much is being spent, you make a decision for yourself. You know, we're not here to persuade you in one direction or the other. But I know we do explain in our film about the banks. We talk specifically about that, how, you know, banks can accept cash deposits of up to they only, once they fill out a $10,000 cash deposit, do they have to fill out an ACFC form. But they can deposit $9,999.99 with little question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and banks want your money, so they're like, oh, perfect. You know, in the film we talk about, like, oh, you sold a motorbike. Oh, you know, you sold a boat. Cool. Right? They want the money. It's a business. That's why we really call it the business behind getting high.
I see. Now, you say your film deals a lot with the British Columbia industry, but I'm looking through your interview list and I noticed some people from the California marijuana industries here, some of the medical patients and such. How does medical marijuana and the dispensary movement, does it fit into your look at the economy here?
No, we did the film, like, it's only getting out now because it's so tough to get documentaries to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only coming out today, after we were done in 2007. So the dispensary movement was really getting started then and really flourishing now. But I think what's happening is because, you know, the state of California has passed the law for medicinal marijuana quite a while ago, but the federal government still doesn't recognize it. So everybody's trying to jump into that business before everyone's thinking it's going to shift. And everybody wants to be one of the first businesses in, because anytime you can be the first in anything, you have the ability to make a ton of money, right? So everybody's trying to capitalize on that. But I do know one problem I've kind of heard doing some research is that for the casual smoker now, it's really confusing on where they get it, because not a lot of people want to go to their doctor and lie just so they can get a medical prescription to smoke weed. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, dealers and stuff are kind of being pushed out because they're like, well, everyone's just going to these dispensaries and they're getting, you know, clean product where they know where it's grown, what strain it is, whether it used or, you know, fertilizers or everything was organic. So you can see right there that it's already kind of pushed that underground market out of the way, right? Because they're like, man, these dispensaries are everywhere. We can't compete with these dispensaries on every corner.
Sure. Okay. Now, looking through just one of the blurbs here up on the website, asks a lot of these questions that I suppose are addressed in your movie. And one of the last points here had to do with the uses of industrial hemp, paper, fuel, textiles, and food, and so on, which is obviously, economically speaking, kind of a separate issue. Do these growers, you talked about the growers wanting to keep it illegal to keep their profits high, do they also oppose the legalization of hemp for those kind of reasons?
Yeah, I mean, the growers, they're only concerned about one thing, right, and that's making profits. They don't care about what the product can do for medical patients. I mean, in BC, I'm not saying in California, it's a very different situation out there, because you do have a lot of medical patients that are seeking the, you know, the medical use of marijuana that they need. But in BC, the growers are only making it for one thing, and that's to traffic it to the United States. That's why it gets a lot of the rap where everyone's like, oh, BC bud's so strong, which is not entirely correct. What it is that in BC, generally, most of it is done indoors so that we can grow it year-round. And when you grow it indoors, you're growing indicas, which grow short and produce heavy buds, versus a sativa, which usually grows tall and produces less. And then, you know, they're pumped full of, like, overbudding and fertilizers and everything else to make sure they produce heavy, right? So you can get the maximum amount of bud per light in order to vacuum seal it, dry it, and send it to the United States for trafficking. So they don't really care anything about the hemp. A lot of them, I think, don't even really know much about hemp, right? They only know how to grow how to get 1 to 1.5 to 2 pounds per light and send that to the states and make lots of money.
Hmm. It's an amazing topic economically, and we see that that's a lot of what's getting the interest from the media now is the economics of that, especially as places like California look at these different ways of taxing, and California's got a legalization bill that would actually tax marijuana for sale as well. And it sounds like from your experience here talking to the folks in BC, if that went up for a vote in British Columbia, would people support it? And how hard? I imagine the dealers would fight it pretty hard. But would the people support it? What do you think?
No, there's a lot of people that would support it. I mean, definitely, there's a lot of people that rather see legislation. You know, even if you don't fully, you know, trust governments nowadays, I mean, I still think it's better to have it in their hands than in the hands of organized criminals. So you would have a lot of people supporting it. And I mean, the growers and dealers, even though they don't support stuff like this, they stay low key, right? They're not the kind of people that are going to go and vote.
Yeah.
Right? They try to stay away from things like that. But as you say, with the current state of the U.S. economy, I mean, this is coming up more and more, because I think one of the biggest issues that I'm seeing is, even from people that have never really been in the marijuana argument, is that people are tired of someone that had, you know, a drug conviction 20 years ago and still can't get a job and help contribute to the growth of the country and the growth of the country's economy.
Right.
You know, like me personally, I don't really care if someone smoked weed or even if they did cocaine 20 years ago. If they've been clean for years, get them back in the workforce. Help them to grow my country and grow my country's economy, because then they're either going to go two ways if they're not working. They're either going to drain the welfare system, which is going to cost me as taxpayer more money, you know, and it's not helping the growth of my economy, or they're going to go more illegal because people are going to do what they have to do to survive,
right,
which is back into the drug system. So I think that argument right now has been one of the ones that's really looked at, you know, not to mention the cost we incur, either this guy draining the welfare system or going through the judicial system that you know, states spend on incarcerating people for minor drug possession.
Right. Well, the movie is The Union Movie. It's The Union, the business behind getting high. The website is theunionmovie.com. It's won Best Canadian Documentary from a couple of, a few, actually, of these film festivals up in Canada. What's next for your movie? Any more festivals? And how can people get a copy of it?
Well, yeah, it's comes out today on DVD, so it's available pretty much everywhere. Best Buy, down the States, Netflix, Hollywood Video, Blockbuster. I mean, it's unbelievable that we got this nationwide release. As far as film festivals, I thought we were done, but I've had some really inspired fans here in the last little bit that have just contacted me. One guy in particular, Brandon, he's been just amazing. He's booked an event in Denver, a double screening the weekend of the 20th. He's got another one he wants to do in Hamilton, Ontario in September. Universities are contacting me. I'm doing a screening in Massachusetts at one of the universities out there at the end of September as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to several universities next year. It's hard to say. Every time I think I'm about done and ready to move on the next project, I get contacted to talk more about this one.
That's great. And if you're looking for more places to screen the film, I coordinate all the normal chapters here in the States and abroad. So maybe we can coordinate and get some more screenings for you. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the more the better. I would definitely like that. And I really appreciate you letting me come on today.
Oh, absolutely. Adam Scorgi from The Union, the business behind getting high. Check out the movie at theunionmovie.com. Thank you, Adam, for joining us here on the show.
Hey, Russ, thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with lots of thanks for supporting us in our efforts to get Normal Show Live off the ground. And like I told you, it's going to go. We are going to still put it on the air. So keep those contributions coming. We're going to make you proud with the best live talk radio show all over cyberspace and your iPhone and BlackBerry. And you can call in live to talk to us and ask questions of all the people we talk to on Normal Show Live. We're not going to let the mainstream media stop us. Our message needs to be heard, and your contributions are a very important part of that. Again, thank you so much. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We appreciate each and every one of you. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.